there. I'm Dr. Gabe Lowe, and welcome to the Hard Questions, No Answers podcast. This is a show that is less interested in answering life's difficult questions and more interested in the process of wrestling with them. This podcast is a forum to celebrate the messiness that makes us human. It is a place to invite the unanswerable questions because often it is precisely these types of questions that push us to dig deeper, to think harder, and to refine our approach to life. So, if you get to the end of the episode and you still have lots of questions, then I've done my job. I invite you on the pursuit of no answers. My guest today is Christina Lee Chan, who was classically trained in both performance and visual art at the Art Institute of Chicago. She has particular affinities towards mediums such as dance, painting, and photography, and she is passionate about integrating art more into the life of the church. Please enjoy my conversation with Christina Lee Chan. Christina C. Lee. I know you as C, and so I feel like I'm going to be calling you that. But Christina, thank you so much for joining us, and I'm really excited about this topic. And we met, I don't even remember when we met, because it's probably in college, so it's probably been, we've probably known each other for at least 7, 8 years, 9 years, maybe.
And I think so,
we met through church, and we're pretty good friends, and we have stayed in touch. And one of the things that we engaged with when we were together in person, and something that we talked about, and something that's important to you, is art. It's been a part of your life. You studied it. And as far as I know, you've always been very artistic. Can you talk a little bit about what that was like for you growing up? You know, was art something that was encouraged or discouraged in your family? Share a little bit about that.
Well, I think I knew, and my family knew from a very young age, that I was artistic. And I don't know, I think it was encouraged, but like in a weird way, where it was like, I always felt like I had to work very hard in my art, almost to overcompensate for what I couldn't do on the other end, if that makes sense. Like academically, I wasn't, like, I opted out of physics and all that in high school to pursue like AP art and to do other things. But there was always this weird feeling of like, is there something off with me in my Asian culture? Like, is there something strange that I'm not able to? I felt like there was like an inability to be what everyone else was, perhaps. So I always kind of felt that feeling of I'm very like on the outskirts, or I'm a little too odd, or I'm a little too like involved with things that people don't understand or don't know. So I think that's in a way, so it's like a yes or no, yes and no. Like, obviously my parents were very supportive. I was tutored a lot growing up, particularly in fine arts foundations. And I was allowed to, you know, go to art school, which is like, you know, some people don't get to go to art school because people don't see value in it. And so I had all those things, but also just having to also feel like you're kind of left to figure it out, because also your parents or your family don't know how to navigate you in this way, is also like, was definitely there. So yeah, that's kind of how I would describe growing up as a creative person in more Asian American immigrant family context.
Yeah. And I think an image that a lot of people have when they think of art is sort of the starving artist, you know, that there is a sense that you have to sacrifice either, am I going to make money or am I going to be true to my passion, to sort of feel that freedom to create whatever I want, regardless of who's going to pay for it. Did you feel any of that tension as you were going through your journey in art, that sense of I've got to sacrifice one side or the other?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Gabe, I think when you met me, I was doing like 3 or 4 jobs. I was teaching art. I was working at an anthropology. I was, what else? I was doing photography. And then I was like, I was a barista for a little bit. Like, I was just kind of trying to pursue the dreams, right? But then also, having to try to figure it out, because there isn't a lot of space for validity in art unless you are famous, or if you suddenly become like the next big thing that people want to buy off galleries. You know, it's it just takes a while. And I think I also remember when I was growing up, I was very aware of that fact that, like, maybe I should be a graphic design artist, or maybe I should be an art teacher, or maybe, you know, these places have salaries.
With a very clear path.
Yeah. And benefits, like, you know, like all these things.
Healthcare,
my gosh. Yeah. And gosh, I didn't have healthcare for a long time. Like, but then you realize, because I did pursue education for a while, you just realize it's not where you're supposed to go, I guess. And so you just do what you can. And like, there's this fight, you need to like fight through your passion, I guess, or like pursue it in a way and hope that you don't drown in the judgment around you of other people that are like, what are you doing with your life? Why are you working 3-4 jobs? You know? Yeah, because you love it. Like, it's, you can't imagine yourself doing anything else.
So, you know, talking about just the difficulties that some artists have in terms of feeling like they have to choose between being able to support themselves or being able to create the kinds of things that they like, it can create a lot of tension. And I think there can be something lost when artists feel like they can't really do their job. And at the same time, I recognize that some people feel like they want to steward their own resources, the money that they have, in a way that is best for their family. So how do you talk with people about some of that tension around money, the topic that so much of us hate to talk about in terms of, it's an awkward topic to talk about, but I think especially with artists, it can feel like they're sort of stuck in terms of, how much do I charge for this piece of art? Or, you know, how much is my work worth?
Yeah. It's definitely worth, if any artists are wondering this, it's definitely worth asking around. Like, if you know people who are being paid for their work, or you can even look on, I don't know, Etsy or different places that independent artists are. I know Etsy is kind of a funny place, but like, you can look at where people, how people are selling their work and trying to do that. But yeah, I think that's a big thing where the church doesn't know how to pay for their artists, and don't realize that they need to pay their artists. And even with budgeting, the way that the church budgets, they don't budget to pay artists, but like, the church always needs artists. They always need decor, and they always need stage things, and they need stuff. They need people to decorate the church and things like that, but they don't pay them. And I think that's, it's a weird
volunteer
thing.
Basis.
It is. And I understand that if you are an accountant and you are leading worship, I understand that, you know, but if your job and you studied to paint, then you should be paid to paint something for the church. And that has been one of the most difficult things to talk about in the church, actually, in terms of validating art. I know churches who like pay people that are dancers, you know, and they do a performance, they'll pay them, you know, they pay their worship leaders, and they pay people who, they commission people to do art instead of that being like, hey, do you want to volunteer to make a piece for us, you know? Because it is our livelihood. It is our, it's not just the thing that you see, it's the paint, it's all the resources and all the things that you have to gather to do this thing. And yeah, I'm still trying to push for having even just an on-staff artist or someone, you know, in our church to be someone that will be paid to take care of those things. So I do think it's important. Yeah, I think if you truly respect artists in the church, you have to allow them to get paid for it.
And the word that comes to mind is vocation, that just like anybody else has, you know, either a job or occupation or a calling, whatever word you want to attach to it, that's the same thing an artist feels, that I'm called to do this, or this is my job, or this is how I've chosen to give my energy. So yeah, thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
And to give listeners a little bit more context, can you talk a little bit about sort of the mediums that you pursued, some of the mediums of art that were particularly impactful for you, and also maybe a little bit of your philosophy with art? Because I feel like every artist sort of has to come to their sense of what art means to them. So can you talk a little bit about some of the mediums that were important to you, and then also sort of how you thought about, you know, what did art mean to you personally?
Yeah. So as I mentioned before, I studied very heavily in fine arts. I was kind of working a lot to build up a good solid foundation in fine arts, which means like painting, oil painting, acrylics, you know, pencil, charcoal, doing the still lifes, doing the figure drawings. And that was very dominant up to high school. And then once I got to the Art Institute, I was like, I'm not prepared for this conceptual school. Like, I don't know who I am. And basically my time there was to figure that out. And I think so at the Art Institute, I was able to kind of mix my love for performance art. Like, I love to dance, and that was a passion for me for a very long time, and I hope to continue it after the pandemic's over. But doing performance art, and then also evolving my fine arts background and trying to mix those things together. So that was something that I pursued very heavily, mm-hmm. where I was doing a lot of movement with painting and doing a lot of just organic painting instead of very structured painting. I loved gesture, and I loved chaos within order and all these things, like trying to understand these things. And mm-hmm. and then I loved also art therapy. Like, that was another thing that I was potentially going to pursue when I was there, because I loved the idea of deconstructing what art is supposed to be in the process of art. And I think a lot of us, we love the process afterwards or at the end when we're done, but we don't really appreciate, you know, where we're at, and we don't know how to tap into how this makes us feel, how this is it, you know, how this is working. It's just, we need to get to the goal of like the product or what we're making. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So art therapy was just amazing to be like, oh, I love having a sense of understanding your space and understanding yourself within the context of the process of your art. And that tied into, you know, my performances and the way that I was painting as well. It was really tapping into deeper emotions or deeper intuition of myself, and I even like how others are experiencing that as well. So that was kind of more of the pursuit that I had when I was trying to figure myself out or figure out what was important to me in art. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. that's kind of where I was at, and that still carries on now too. I feel very strongly about the intuition of art. Mm-hmm. More sometimes even more than the pursuit of the product sometimes. Like, I sure. want to always bring myself back into that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I heard a couple of things. You know, the one that you mentioned just now about sort of that journey and being able to appreciate the process and not just the product. I also heard a theme in terms of that order and chaos and sort of that relationship of, I think those who aren't as chaos inclined can be scared by that, and it can mm-hmm. feel very unsettling. And the other one that stuck out to me as I was listening was that sense of inner emotions sort of cutting beneath the surface and being able to sort of get at that rawness that might be there. Can you talk a little bit about where some of those themes come from in your life? Feel free to sort of pick and choose what you'd like to talk about, but I'm curious, sort of out of your own personal journey, where did some of those artistic journeys come from?
Yeah, I mean, everything comes from when we were growing up, right? Like, everything is connected to
it's a good psychology up. Answer. Right? I approve.
Yeah, I mean, I think growing up in my Asian American context, especially in Korean context, there's a lot of saving face. There's a lot of you really should not act the fool, you know, in front of others, especially your church members and things like mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of a child that was more in tune with my emotions, more aware of what I was feeling. And I think I didn't have the structure of this is what you're feeling and it's okay. So I think, and I was always very interested in the rawness of emotions. Growing up, I was more interested in like the villains in Disney movies because they were so fascinating. Like they were just who they were. And they were like, this is me. I am this. I want everything, you know? And I was like, wow, that's so interesting. Like, why can't I tap into just being who I am? So I think I'm sure that is a lot of a driving force of just wanting to be able to be in a context where I can be raw and be in tune, but also having it to be something purposeful and much more like creative in that manner. And yeah, so that's why those things of journey and chaos and rawness, like texture, I would also add in there. Texture is very important to me. I joke that I could never be an architect because I can barely draw like a straight line. I'm just more like, you know, so sorry, that's not articulate. I shouldn't just make sound effects like that. But yeah, that's where I'm kind of involved in. And I love to be in that space. Yeah.
Yeah. So I can imagine if art is this way for you to work out some of these things that really were difficult and you wrestled with, maybe even without even knowing it or not even having some of the words to put to your experience. I can imagine that being able to find that voice or find some of those outlets were satisfying. And going back to when I met you, there were just some very practical things of being able to use that in an occupation. And so I'm thinking specifically like when you were in anthropology, you helped with the design of and the aesthetic of the store. So I'm curious, was that satisfying? Was that sort of scratching some of that artistic itch? Or do you feel like you really had to get that outlet in stuff that you chose, you initiated, that you were just free to do whatever the heck you wanted?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a good place because I learned so much. I felt like I was in a place because I never really worked on, I had to kind of stretch myself, you know, because I was in this new place of I'm not at art school anymore. So what am I going to figure out? And doing display at Anthropology was, I actually really loved it for the most part, because just having to create from scratch, having to build things up and having them on display in that manner, it was extremely satisfying to be so textile and to learn how to, I don't know, work with wood, work with lots of materials that I've never really worked with before. And I love that it was more of an expressive place than to not just have everything kind of just look the same, which I loved as well. So yeah, I would say, obviously, it's very different from what I was doing back at art school, but I was very willing to evolve and learn as well. And I appreciated that time. Yeah, even when I was, even photography, I was doing photography for a long time, and that is not what I thought I was going to be doing for a while. But I think what I loved about it was that I got to meet so many people, and I got to really tap into stories that I would never have known if I wasn't shooting their weddings or shooting their, you know, their newborns and stuff like that. But it was just in their families. Like, I learned so much from just learning how to connect with them. So I think the connection piece was huge for me. As long as I could connect with people, as long as I was learning and I was growing and I was still within the realms of what I wanted to be, I felt pretty okay.
I like that word that you use, connection, of being able to connect with the people that are perhaps either benefiting or that you're working with. And I felt this at some times that, I think for some people, approaching art can feel very intimidating if you don't know the language, or if it's unfamiliar to you, if you're not used to that kind of music or that kind of art. It can feel sort of like you're stepping into a different world. What did you learn, or what would you say to somebody who's trying to engage with art but not really sure sort of what to either get out of it or how to connect with the art?
Mm.
What kinds of things would you say?
Yeah, art is very broad. Like it's so broad, and it has an immense history, depending on where you're looking at or what you're looking at, right? And I totally understand the intimidation of art because, you know, I remember coming into art school and everyone's just name dropping all these artists. They're just so cool. And, you know, they're like, I don't give an F about life, like what I look like. I'll just buzz inside of my head and I'm good. Like, you know, so it's intimidating. Like it is, you just feel like you're not cool enough to be in this space. But I also think that art can be a space where you are pushed and you are stretched a little bit. And that's kind of what it's supposed to be as well. And like talking about art is really interesting because what are we talking about? Like,
you know, sure. Like, yeah. It's
you such know, a what exactly are we talking
broad
about?
Broad umbrella. Yeah.
It is. So, yeah. So even when I'm talking to someone, like, for example, like I remember talking to someone about like doing a dance performance, let's say, and having like, they don't think that the song I chose is appropriate for what they believe it's supposed to be. So there's this nuance of like, this is my idea of art. And I think the best thing we can do is to not ever do this with art, like ever kind of pinch it into a space, because that's the reason why that word is so broad, is because it's not meant to ever be contained. It's not ever meant to be just one sphere, one side of something. It's really meant to be, it's supposed to tap in all the boxes because it exists everywhere. And I think people try to monopolize it, try to make it like you need to buy this specific type of art to be famous, to be successful. You need to sound like this musician to be blank, you know, but I don't know. I don't think it's, personally for me, I don't think it's meant to be used in those ways. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just don't pinch it into a little box and see where it takes you. I think that's what I would say.
Sure.
You could be open.
As we were talking, the thought that came to mind was art in the church. You know, we both share, we've both shared experiences being in the same church, and we both share a passion and love for that kind of community and that kind of culture. But I think that sort of pigeonholing or boxing in can definitely happen within church contexts. And so I'm curious what you've seen as an artist from that perspective. How has your artistic either predisposition or talents, how do you feel like that's either been validated or invalidated within a church context?
Yeah, I mean, I've always tried to serve as much as I could within the context of what I'm passionate about or what the ways that God has created me to do those things. But I often feel that those roles are very limited. They are very, like I think in when I was in youth group, the most I was allowed to do was change up the calendar board and like make it really cute and crafty. And I was like, okay, you know,
like cut out construction paper.
Yeah, write out happy month of the, you know, whatever, like happy Sunday, guys. Like, so I mean, I think in the capacities that I have served, there is always a push and a back and a bit of an uncomfortability of, is this, I think the thing that I hear the most is like, is this, how purposeful is this? You know, how useful is this? You know, and I think a lot of times the church, the boxing in of the church with art is mostly because we believe that art needs to have a very intentional, very strong purpose and what it's supposed to look like and what it's going to portray and who the audience is. Mm-hmm. And art is those things as well. Like art can be used in those ways, but art is also like making the viewer ask questions. it also is open-ended. It is also confusing. It is provocative. It is political. It's just so many things that like we don't want to be. And all those things that I named are also things that like the church refuses to even partake, right? Like we don't want to ask questions. We don't want to seem political, or like we don't want to be provocative. We want to make sure everything is safe and structured. And I'm not saying that art in the church has to be provocative. What I'm saying is art is not allowed to be what it is. Then you're just only going to have one lane of what it is. Mm-hmm. And more afraid, I think what I sense too is the fear, is like fear of not wanting art to look like that, whatever that is. Like, we don't want it to be like that.
Sure.
But we want it to be the way that we're supposed to have it. So that could mean continuously using the same Christian motifs, like in the work, or even just like, I remember I was doing stage design at my church, and I was like, we don't have to be so literal. You know, we don't always have to put a cross on everything, or, you know, but like, like we can just have things be beautiful. Like, we can have things kind of just be, like, for example, I remember for Easter, I made these banners that were watercolored to kind of represent these like multicolored clouds that were kind of seeping in on each other. And my understanding was like, I wanted to image of like what Jesus might have saw when he was going up into heaven, you know, when he was being lifted up again. And, you know, people saw and they're like, oh, it's beautiful, but can we just put like a cross under there? Like, can we put something there to just make sure it's not? And also, I think there was like, there was a fear that it would like look too gay. And it was like, well, okay, you know, so I put like little like hills, and I put like three crosses on it to just help people feel better, you know. And I was like, it doesn't need that, and I understand why, but yeah, so those are the things that I think are very difficult in terms of art, that it just has to be literal, and it's frustrating. It's very frustrating in that way.
So I'd like to sort of explore that a little bit more with you. I think some of the words that stuck out to me as you were talking, that sense of purpose or meaning, and I think it goes along with the motivation that I had for starting this podcast, of not feeling like everything had to have a nice, neat answer. Maybe there is an answer out there somewhere, but just having the conversation is enough in itself, even if we don't arrive there in an hour and some change. And you spoke a little bit to perhaps some of the motivation on the other side, that there's a sense of fear, that there's something that can be holding back. You know, with that sense of meaning and purpose, what do you think would be the argument or the fear on the other side of, what if it didn't have any meaning? What if it was just a piece of art? Or what if it just looks pretty? Or what if it just look beautiful?
Yeah.
What do you think is some of that push to sort of make it more meaningful or more? And to be fair, I sort of push back on that notion a little bit more of, if you put a hill with three crosses, how much more are you adding to that? Because the people who are looking at that already know that Jesus died on the cross for their sins. And if you don't know the story, then that doesn't mean anything to you. And so, yeah, I want to just sort of wrestle with you a little bit in terms of, what do you think is some of that fear of, if it doesn't have enough meaning, it's going to do some sort of damage, or it's not going to be enough?
I think there's a very strong fear of, it has to be very plain sight, or else it'll be interpreted. And I think that fear comes from a place of not wanting to look like someone else, not wanting to seem like a non-Christian. And so we take what we believe are the checkpoints of like, this is what it means to be a believer, is the mark of like that you are saved, and that you are being transformed by Christ. And if you don't do these things, then you're lost and you're a sinner, and you're not you're not within this realm of what the church is. And I understand that. I know there's because we are in a place where we have to literally interpret what a Bible that was written a long time ago has said, you know, and we're so dependent on our leaders to interpret that and to help us through that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they get it wrong. You know, we get it wrong all the time. And so I think there's just a fear of like, if I'm not doing this well, then I might not be who I'm supposed to be, or I might not be.
Totally.
And just talking about that more, I do feel that there, because of those fears, that there is, that's one of the reasons why the church has such a strong sense of exclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's not even an active sense of exclusion, but it's the everyone personally or even culturally feels like they need to adhere to a certain type of person. Then you are not allowing people who really could want to be part of the body or have been trying for so long to fit in, they can't be who God has made them to be because of those things. And I've seen that in my life where I look back now where my behavior or like the things that I fear so much, I'm realizing a lot of that came from a sense of, oh, I still have to behave a certain way. I still have to look a certain way, or else people will think like I'm lost. And like, mm-hmm. my mom didn't raise me well, right? Like as a Christian. And there's a lot of that fear. And for me, I've always felt like God exists everywhere. God exists in the places that we don't think he does. Mm-hmm. And in the people that we think he is not with. And I've just always kind of felt that we limit God when we do that, when we live in that fear and we box everything in, that we don't even allow to see what God is doing in this mm-hmm. complex and very like crazy thing that we're living in, that he has made, and the people that he surrounded us with. So to me, it makes me sad, because I don't think that's how he wants us to operate.
Sure. Yeah. I think that's really helpful. I think when you're talking, I'm thinking of sort of this divide that we make between what's secular and what's sacred, what's the world and what's Christian, that there's this hard line in the sand of, once you step over that line, then you're worldly, or then you're secular, then you've sort of abandoned the faith, or you've abandoned what we believe. And I think that's really helpful in terms of what is it. And to be fair, you know, I think that that can happen. And there are instances where perhaps there has been, and maybe it's not wrong, but I think it definitely validates that fear of it's offensive, or there's some art out there that just is aggressive or anti-Christian. And
sure.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that there's stuff out there, but I think when you limit one area, you end up limiting everything.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you've spoken a little bit to what can be lost if we put some of those restraints on art, that we might miss out on where God is working in some of those places, you know, that God went to the sinners and the tax collectors and the oppressed and the sick and all the people who society would say, why are you going there? And perhaps that's the place where the church needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to ask you, sort of along that vein, what do you think a church community, or really any community who wants to be more intentional about stepping into the richness or fullness of what art can offer, you know, what do you think a community effort looks like in terms of opening yourself up to what art can add?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. I think I'll give you an example. When I started going to art school, I think I came into this idea that I'm going to be the Christian and I'm going to go there and save people. Like, I don't think I did that too much, but now that I think about it, I think it was in the back of my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized coming in that I wasn't seeing people for who they were
mm-hmm.
with that mindset. I wasn't allowing myself to just be there and learn from people. And I think once I kind of decided I was going to take that off and put it away for a bit, because why am I saving people? Like, am I any better than anyone? Sure. Like, where did I even get this idea that? And I remember when I was going to go to art school, so many people were like, oh, such a dark place. Like, you are stepping into really dark places. And once I did step into those places, it didn't seem that way. I get the sentiment. I get why people feel that way. But it's also like, that's the other. Like, I don't know what's over there. So it's dark. Mm-hmm. And I know that it's a little bit, it's not like us. So it's like, it's crazy over there. Sure. Be careful, you know? And I'll give you some examples of what I experienced is, I remember in one of my performance classes, there was a girl who, she made this long, like, tube, and it was only open on one end, and the other end, it was sealed. And you can hear, like, she went inside, and there was like a little light in there, and the rest of the room was dark. And she invited you to come inside and talk to her. So you had to kind of crawl in there. It was like a 5 foot, like, okay, 4 or 5 foot thing. So you had to like physically crawl in there to meet her. And she has this like tape recorder playing, and I forgot what the tape was playing, but I could hear, and you were allowed to walk around the space, obviously, and observe. Mm-hmm. And I could hear her saying things like, what's wrong with me? Why doesn't Jesus love me? You know, and what did I do that I'm not allowed to be with my family anymore? Why do they hate me so much? You know, and those are the pieces that I remember just feeling like whatever bubble that I came from just like completely was gone, because I was like, wow, I can't, like, the whole idea of like, we have to protect our own against whatever this is, just melted, because I realized, like, are we inadvertently like hurting people because of our own fears, because we're not willing as a community to lower our walls a little bit or open our doors, sure, a little bit and say, hey, like, you're obviously different, you're new, but it's, it doesn't matter to me, it's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, like,
yeah.
I think that it takes an active, intentional mentality to say, hey, we're not going to think this way as a church. We don't want to come off this way to anyone that steps into our building, because it's not fair. And no one should feel that way when they come before God and to meet Jesus. Like, that's not what he would ever want for anyone. So I think that component of leadership saying we really need to actively make sure that we say, like, we're not going to be this way. These are the ways that we are not going to treat people anymore. And also even saying sorry. You know, the church is so bad at communally repenting and saying, as a church, as the big C, we are sorry that we caused so much pain in the past. We, even going deeper politically, like, we've condoned slavery. We've done things, you know, we allow sexism to be prevalent in our churches. We allow LGBTQ people to be disregarded and even feel like they're in danger in our buildings. So there's so many, right? And communally, I don't know if we feel like we even need to apologize to people. We still feel like we need to keep our guard up, and that only causes more tension, that only causes more fighting. So those are some things. But also, I think people need to actively do research, actively listen to people's stories and say, I don't think I understand this person's perspective. Maybe I can find stories that are similar to that, so I can learn. Because if you just stay in your bubble and you just stay within the people that you know and you understand, then you will never understand someone that is radically different than you, and that is also very affected by the bubble, remaining the bubble too.
And I think that just sort of encapsulates so well what we have been talking about today, of listening, of hearing other people's stories, that when there is something that you don't understand in art, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's bad. It just means that you might have to stop talking and listen. and that hearing those stories is how we learn and how we understand. And it's ironic in a way that when the church tries to protect itself, that's when it ceases to be what the church was designed to be, which is people, not an idea or not a building. But the church is supposed to be people and stories. So thank you for sharing your story with us and for coming on this podcast. I really appreciate all that you shared and definitely given us a lot to think about.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to the Hard Questions, No Answers podcast. Still have questions? Oh, good. I was afraid we answered them all. For more information about HQ&A podcast, visit drgabelowe.com. That's drgabelowe.com. Additional educational materials recommended by my guests can be found in the podcast tab. And for the updates, news, and behind the scenes, follow HQ&A podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at HQ&A POD. HQ&A podcast is independently produced by Gabriel Lowe. Music is Cocktail Fun by Stock Music 331, found on Pond 5. And logo design is by Kenny Lowe. Stay tuned for new episodes released each Wednesday, and thank you for joining me on the journey of No Answers.